And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to this. Oh, by the way, we've seen four fall camp practices edition, as we are just about 2 weeks away from the Gophers welcoming back the pride of dunkers, Jerry Kill, back here to the Twin Cities. Luke, I don't even know, have we even talked about that whole debacle?
I loosely heard about it, and that it was on and then it was off, but basically my understanding is that Jerry Kill will not be having a speaking engagement on the
after
morning
after Justin Gard put it out there under the Twitterverse. I think there was enough backlash from the Boomers and Dunkers to understand that maybe they should invite the former head coach back to speak at the day of the game after Fleck has talked there six times. But we're not here to talk about that today. Joining us, and we are very grateful for his time, is my first row buddy up there in the Gopher football press box. We are not privy enough to sit in the second row where all the beautiful people are in the papers. Daniel House and I get to sit in the front row where there's about a 20-degree difference on a cold November day from the first row to the second row, where in the second row it feels like it's 70, and the first row you better be wearing a jacket. So joining me is the founder, publisher, and the all-knowing that is Daniel House of GophersGuru.com. Daniel, just saw you yesterday. Happy to see your face again today. How are you, my friend?
Nice to see all of you. This, I always enjoy coming on here. The first row life, though, you just have to get a heater. I went on Amazon.com and bought a personal heater to plug in, bring to the stadium. So it kind of keeps the first couple of seats warm. So, but everybody knows I love to do things like that. I'm a research guy. I like to get little things and find tricks online.
Well, I'm going to have to get Aaron Gleeman's neck fan because I am perpetually sweating, which I'm in the second floor of my house right now. And as Daniel House, when he first joined the video call, said, looks like I'm wearing a bro tank. And I certainly am, because it's about 80 degrees forever in the second floor of my house, which is where my office is. And I'm always sweating. So why would I wear anything that would show my constant sweat? So yes, I am wearing a tank top today, House. You're going to have to deal with it.
Hey, it's styling. You got to go roll with your style. It's your signature.
It's
now,
Buffett Margaritaville one, so I got a nice little ocean blue on. But that's
I'm the bright colors and the bow tie guy, and you're the bro.
See, Luke, people don't know this, that every time I've seen House here in August, which has been like four or five times now, he is wearing the brightest color. You would think that he's ready for deer opener.
Yeah,
for the different amount of blaze, just bright colors that he's wearing. I can assure you, you won't miss Daniel House at a practice. You'll know exactly who our favorite redhead is when you're out there.
Oh, boy.
I appreciate you committing to the bit. You have a brand, Daniel. Stick with it, man. Just, you know, as they say, keep rowing that boat.
It's all about branding. We're all about branding, that's for sure. Yeah.
All right, so let's get into, you guys have had the opportunity to go to a couple of fall practices. I think I even tried to schedule this recording during a fall practice, which,
yeah, that was awfully kind of you yesterday, Luke.
Yeah, which tells you how much I've been busy at work/having kids. But I didn't even know that there was an open practice. I apologize for any confusion, and I know that this provided a lot of frustration for you, Mr. Burns, so I apologize too. But I would be interested to get your early impressions. I know that everybody has the Big Ten Network like bus tour.
They were there
episode
yesterday.
Yeah, they were there, but has it aired yet? I don't think that it has. We're recording this on a Tuesday in the afternoon, so I assume that it hasn't aired yet, but, you know, this might be everybody's first opportunity to hear some observations if you haven't been able to get to practice. So, Ryan, maybe we'll start with you. What were your early impressions here from fall camp?
Well, I would tell you, if you haven't really heard any observations yet, you're clearly not subscribed. Number one, to GopherIllustrated.com, $1 for 30 days, or GophersGuru.com, where I believe it is $5, Mr. House?
$5 a month, yes.
So we would encourage you to support local journalism, because who else are you going to get it from? Because I know damn well you're not going to get it from the papers. So I think, House, let's start on the offense, where I think my questions were going to be, what is this offense going to look like after the spring, in terms of they did a lot of install in the spring with Kirk Shiraka back. And I think the thing that I've noticed is I do think that you can find a viable option number two and number three in the passing game, because I think we knew that Chris Ottman-Bell had obviously been Mr. Consistent. And I think you and I would be remiss if we didn't mention that. I think you and I were both looking at each other after the first two practices we saw and was like, what's going on with Chris Ottman Bell? Because it wasn't Chris Ottman Bell like. And then the last two practices we were at, Chris Ottman Bell looked like Chris Ottman Bell. So I think I kind of attribute that to maybe Chris was coasting a little bit. Sixth year, what does he have to prove? But I think Dalen Wright and Brevin Spanford are guys that are going to be counted on heavily. I mean, we're talking about Dalen, who only played 25% of the snaps last year. Brevin Spanford has 28 career catches. So before I spin a yarn about my favorite tight end to ever play in a Golden Gopher uniform, Daniel House, what have been your impressions of Dalen Wright and Brevin Spanford here that you've seen through four practices?
Yeah, Kirk Shiraka talking up Brevin Spanford and just talking about how outstanding
my heart skipped a beat, if we're going to be honest here, when he said what he said. Again, I put it to him on a tee. Just I didn't want to bias him. It was how would you characterize, I think, more or less, Brevin's fall camp? And House, when he said those beautiful words that you can read on Gopher Illustrated, you can watch Daniel House's clip on Twitter. Oh, it was a little pitter-patter.
It was apparent how much growth they've witnessed from Brevin just in every element of the game, the run blocking, the route running. And the low-key detail that I don't think enough people are talking about is Greg Harbaugh coming back. His mind in terms of passing game concepts working under Tim Lester, Western Michigan, me going through and doing a deep dive on their stuff, the answers that they had for the RPO game, when teams are getting so creative with how they take away these RPOs in a variety of different ways. And Kirk even mentioned that yesterday when I was asked about the evolution of defense the past couple of years. Western Michigan had a lot of answers for that. So him coming back and providing his insight as a coach who's worked with wide receivers and done a really good job coaching wide receivers in recent years, his perspective with route running and all of those details will be really important for the passing game. And that's the thing, like, look at what Kirk Shiraka was able to do with Pat Freiermuth when he's at Penn State. He is willing to adapt the scheme to the strength of the players, and him having a whole calendar year where he was an analyst there, just soaking in a whole bunch of different things. What type of modern wrinkles will we see within the offensive scheme? I can't wait for like the first three film breakdowns from Big Ten play, because those
will be
really fun.
I'm glad you preferenced it there with Big Ten play, because I know, to the bane of the existence of the casual Gopher fan, House, I mean, New Mexico State and Western Illinois, I hope and pray to all that is above that we don't have to see anything more than basic three plays, because you don't need to. And then we'll see what Mike Sanford's Colorado team has to play. But I mean, I think it was really interesting when Kirk kind of answered the question of what does balance mean to you? Mm-hmm. And I actually liked his answer, where it's going to be on a game by game basis. If one game they think that they have to win by running for 300 yards, they'll do it. But in that same breath, Kirk mentioned that if they think they have to throw for 350 on that week, they're going to schedule a game plan around doing it. But again, I'd still come back to the whole Justin Guard question, the pride of Edina's eighth grade B basketball team, Justin Guard, that Kirk coming back, maybe the most underrated part of it, and I know he asked you this on his show, House, was,
yeah,
Kirk's not afraid to say no to PJ. And maybe Sanford, as a new kind of employer, had maybe not enough, I don't know that stones is the right word, but in terms of just being able to say no to somebody, if PJ wants to abandon ship and never throw the ball again because A, Tanner threw a pick, or B, the receiver dropped the ball, ran the wrong route, I think Kirk has the gusto, and I think maybe most importantly the brownie points, to say, no, PJ, you and I have been doing this long enough. We're going to stick on schedule. Do you think that's some, you know, crackpot theory, or are you buying into something like that?
Well, just the experience level of Kirk is huge, because he's been there, done that. And when you see an exotic game plan sometimes where something on film, you don't see it during the week, Kirk's able to adjust to that. We saw what Rossi was able to do all season last year. When you get those like junkyard ball games, like Rossi calls them sometimes, is like the moments where you have no idea what's going to happen, and you're throwing all these wrinkles at the wall and you have to adjust really fast. Kirk Soraka can do that offensively and come up with things and have answers. And he will go through that film, fine tooth comb, find tendencies. I think about some of the things in the Penn State game, the tendencies that were found to create some of those big plays. I remember looking at some of that stuff going, man, he put in that work that bye week leading into the Penn State game. And just every single week, Kirk's attention to detail is where you'll notice the biggest difference. And then also being able to build off of it. I know everybody's talking about run pass option, RPO, all that. But really what made that offense special was how multidimensional it was. You were able to really take what the defense has given you because you can go, okay, do you want to bring an extra defender into the box? Well, then it'll take the top up, double move, and just burn you with the play action. And that's where Tanner was very good in 2019 was off play action, like a 75% adjusted completion percentage on those throws, and generated a lot of first downs in those situations. So I feel as if Kirk coming back, that the tendency, the detail, that's where you'll notice the biggest difference, his experience.
All right. So I do want to transition and get individuals that have popped out for both of you. Maybe pick one, camp all-star, and then one like, you know, this guy might be under the radar and might be able to contribute. I'd prefer you wouldn't pick the same ones, but I'm not going to hold you to that.
I think the audience would agree with that.
Yeah. So, who is your camp all-star thus far? And then who is kind of the under the radar, maybe someone we're not talking about, but you think is worthy of some conversation?
House, why don't you go first, do camp all-star, one on offense, one on defense, then I'll take it.
Ooh, well, I want to go a little different on my picks.
Okay.
Ariante Ursary at left tackle. And I know a lot of people have heard the hype about Ariante, but he is one of the most gifted athletic tackles Minnesota's had, probably the highest overall ceiling. And when he starts getting in here and showing what he can do, the things and the options that you have to use him in space, you know, with screens and what he can do in a run game out on the perimeter, like all of those things are going to be capitalized upon, and that all the unique traits, the length, the flexibility, you know, getting into pass sets. I mean, he's just so quick, has unbelievable feet. So I really liked what I saw from Ursary on offense. And then on defense, I would probably go with Tyler Newbin. Just feel like the processing of the game is everything's starting to slow down for him. He's really starting to take command of the defense and playing with good instincts, and just gives you that versatility to do a lot of different things defensively. So he's popped a lot in practice, but there are a couple candidates I could have went with there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not just going to say this one to stick to the brand, but I think Brevin Spann-Ford, I think that third practice where the fans were there at the stadium, that was the best practice I've seen Brevin Spann-Ford have it in a Golden Gopher uniform. The amount of contested catches, the yards after the catch, the, you know, the toe tapping touchdown in the back end zone, which I think, yep, the Gopher football team put on social media, if you want to go see that, it has seemingly been a changed Brevin in that aspect. Now, again, I understand that if you're going to tune me out for this, I get it. But I think I was 2 years too early on the Brevin Spann-Ford hype train. I just think that there's a very real possibility this should be a year where Brevin Spann-Ford catches 35 plus balls. Now, again, I think that's a bold statement because he has 28 career catches, but I think that if you ask around in the Gopher football building, they think that's the expectation. And I think even Kirk Soraka and Greg Harbaugh would tell you that's been the expectation. So I hope that it turns into that on Saturdays. And then House, we'd also be remiss if we haven't. I think this guy has been the best coverage defensive back in fall camp, and that's Terrell Smith.
And then
that's where I love to play kind of the game trend or mirage, because we've seen this before with Terrell Smith. It has never been a question of physical talent or athletic ability with tee time, because he is the most impressive looking cornerback that Minnesota has. He is 6 foot plus. He is incredibly fast. He is incredibly long. House, we were listening to Michael Brown Stevens after practice yesterday talk about how he hates to go against tee time because he has the length, he has the speed to catch up to, and he's bigger than him. And that's where tee time has been the starting corner alongside Justin Wally, not Beanie Bishop, not Ryan Stapp. It's been Terrell Smith getting the constant praise. And again, that was the first thing I noticed at that first practice was Chris Ottman-Vell versus T-Time. T-Time won all four reps. Now, again, I think Chris was coasting to an extent, but in that same breath, it's been that way at every practice. Has been Terrell Smith has been the guy everybody's been talking about. And that's where I've asked around. And I don't know if House has heard anything different, but that's where Minnesota's hopeful this year is different because it's all mental. I mean, and I agree with that because, again, he had a great spring and a great fall last year. And then the Miami of Ohio game came and Mac Hippenhammer won a couple of 50-50 balls against him. And we never really heard from tee time again after he got an injury. And that's why Justin Wally emerged alongside Coney Durr. But if you told me Terrell Smith actually can, number one, stay healthy, and number two, keep this up, I mean, again, it's never been about the question of ability. I mean, House, I remember even going back to when Terrell Smith was playing in 2018. You were the one telling me that there were, again, and this was 4 years ago, and a lot of things have happened between now and then. But, I mean, there were a lot of NFL scouts after his true freshman year being like, this guy, 6 foot, really long, can run. I'm incredibly, you know, it's just about for him, House, when the lights come on Saturdays, is this the year in year five where they can consistently stay on? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I remember getting messages like that saying, who the heck is this guy in 2018? And then it was okay, will Terrell take the next step technically? Will he become more consistent? You know, those deep balls, being able to lean and locate, be in position, not get beat in those situations. And some of those explosive plays, that's the name of the game. You cannot have those explosive plays. And if you give those up, you aren't going to play. And so I look at, you know, what Minnesota's been able to do since Joe Rossi's become full-time defensive coordinator in 19. Gophers have allowed the fifth fewest plays of 20-plus yards. Last year, they were number one in plays at 20-plus yards. If you cannot play with sound technique, execute the scheme, you're not going to play. However, Terrell now, with continued coaching, being healthy, staying out there, doing his thing, he looks much improved. And I even wrote about that just a little bit ago. Is it like, will he take the next step? Can he be this like physical type of boundary corner that can be utilized? Because I know Rossi brought it up yesterday, and I've said it a lot. The mix of skill sets that you have at the cornerback spot allow you to really mix and match against various teams that you're playing on a weekly basis. Like if you're playing more of a power slot, big possession style receiver, which they will see this season based upon doing some studying, and there are a lot of physical body type receivers that they'll go against. You can really match that with some of the personnel, even like Michael Dixon being able to be kind of like in base personnel, but you have a nickel presence out there and that athleticism. So the mixing and matching of the secondary is really fun. This is the most versatile and fast defense that they've had. And if Terrell can take a step forward and give you something, that's just an added bonus on top of what they already have at the corner, in the cornerback room.
So if we're going to say underrated now.
Hold on. I want to add something to the Terrell Smith conversation. Here's one of the reasons that I'm rooting for him this season. In a time where in college football, there's been a lot of ability to exit and, you know, basically find your best fit.
Yep.
This is a kid that stuck it out, right? He's had some definitely highs, but definitely had some lows. But like, kudos to him for sticking with it at University of Minnesota. He could have probably gone anywhere else, maybe indefinitely been guaranteed playing time just on athletic ability alone. So kudos to him. I'm really rooting for this guy. So I really hope that he has a great season and gets a crack at the NFL. Not saying he will. I'm just hoping that he does. I really respect that when somebody, you know, bets on themselves rather than, you know, just finding the easy way out. So,
yeah, I can't say I disagree with anything there. I think underrated offensively, House, we got to talk a little right tackle because I'm going to pick Martez Lewis. Because even where I was thinking right tackle was going to end up, I had Martez Lewis 3 weeks ago, probably was the 3 of 3. And now after watching 4 practices, I would say in my mind, I think Martez Lewis should be the starter, which again, it's been quite the run in my mind for Martez Lewis, where, you know, we all thought it was going to be JJ Gaudet versus Quinn Carroll at right tackle. And then JJ gets hurt and misses all of the spring. So, you know, some sources tell me that he's still not 100% here in the fall. He's getting close to that and should be close to that soon. But House, I think that explains some of the lack of reps for him at times. But I think Martez Lewis, has been the most consistent right tackle. I think he has certainly been a tier above what Quinn Carroll has shown in pass protection at right tackle. But I think Quinn, just in terms of Martez, again, when you think of right tackle, you think of Daniel Faalele, and you think of the 6'8", 370-pound mauler. Mm-hmm. Now, Martez Lewis isn't that large, but he's still a large human being. He's probably a legitimate 6'6", what do you think, 330-ish?
That's probably what I would put him at, yeah, because, I mean, he gives you some guard flexibility, too. He can play inside and out, which is good for you, and that's what I saw, too. Like, watching where he was from the spring to now, there's been progress. He's really improved a lot, which is a great sign. And being able to have him in the fold in the future here is an asset, because he could end up sliding inside. Like, it gives you some options. You have different guys that you could move inside, which is good for the future depth chart. But I agree with you on Lewis. I think he's looked the best out of that group so far, and made a lot of progress from the spring to now, and that's what you want to see at this point.
I think if I'm going to pick underrated defense, and I'll swing it back to you, I just talked about him to you yesterday. Jalen Logan Redding, to me, has been maybe the most improved player I've seen on this 2022 defense, just in terms of where they were when the bowl game ended and then they beat West Virginia to where they were at the practice that we saw this week. Jalen Logan Redding, in my mind, has gone from someone I thought after the bowl game was just going to be a rotational run-stopping five technique to now reunited with Brick Haley. And what I mean by that is the curious case of Jalen Logan Redding, Luke. Jalen Logan Redding decommits back in high school from Missouri. He's from Columbia, Missouri. He decommits from Missouri, I believe, just a couple days after their defensive line coach had been fired. Luke, do you know who the D-line coach was that had been let go from the University of Missouri?
I do know this because you told me this on the last episode. It was Brick Haley.
So now, 3 years later, Jalen Logan Redding ends up committing to Minnesota, signing with Minnesota. He's reunited with Brick Haley, and Brick Haley has lit a fire under that guy. I mean, Jalen Logan Redding, I think, has also transformed his body from year two to year three house. I think he looks a lot more physically put together. He is probably 6'5"-ish, 275 pounds. I mean, he looks exactly the way it's supposed to look. But I think the thing that has really impressed me, House, is I think he is the clear-cut starting five technique. Now, I think we can discuss Lorenzo Sergers, the Vanderbilt transfer, rotating in. We can discuss Ja Joyner and his pass-rushing abilities that we've continued to see on display. But the development that Jalen Logan Redding's had makes me think that there's not going to be a significant drop-off from what we saw from Asezi last year. And I thought Asezi was great last year. I mean, he really was. But the way that Jalen Logan Redding has displayed physicality, he's displayed some pass-rushing ability at times. Now, again, you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt because it is fall camp, and traditionally defensive players are ahead of the offensive players. But, I mean, I didn't expect to be at the end of four practices talking about Jalen Logan Redding, but House, he has been really good through 2 weeks of fall camp.
I like how he's playing the run, setting the edge, which is a key component of the defensive scheme, as we know, and also the pass rushing ability he's flashed as well. Like, his discipline and his smarts stand out, watching him execute the scheme and be able to, you know, just watch him be in position, which is half of it. You know, that's what you want to see, that this stage in camp, somebody that understands the defensive scheme and is really in lockstep with everybody that's on the field. So Jalen, I would agree, has played. It looked extremely impressive in the camp practices, which is great because, like you said, Ja gives you pass rushing ability. You can move him around. Maybe you can kick him inside, line him up inside, do some things with Ja because of that length and athleticism. And that's a case with a lot of these players up front, being able to move them around. And you mentioned Lorenzo. I thought he flashed in some of the earlier open practices along with Jalen Logan Redding. So I was actually writing about the defensive end spot actually looking really strong right now. But, you know, as I look at defensive players that could be under the radar, I'm picking Cody Lindenberg. And I'm feeling this because I watch him make plays in coverage and flash, and he goes hard in every practice. Like, if he makes a mistake, it's 110%. And to be able to maximize his ability and some packages that maybe suit his strengths, that's what I'm looking forward to this season, is him rotating in. And people forget, I mean, he started the 2020 game against Michigan and then missed last season with an injury. So now he's back. He's benefited from the metal reps. He looks really good physically, has made a lot of progress there. That was the big step that he had to take, just, you know, obviously being a true freshman playing in a weird season. But Cody Lindenberg's athletic traits, being able to improve block deconstruction, get more experience in the defense, he's an exciting player, and I could see him really bursting onto the scene defensively.
How about offensively? Who do you got?
Offensively, I'm going to go with a future player. I'm going to go a little bit out there.
Okay.
Let's
hear it.
I want to go with Ike White. And I say this because he's.
So you're not talking about for this 2022 season. You're talking about 23 and 24 potentially.
I'm talking about that, yes.
Okay.
I want to go a little outside the box because we always talk about people who are going to contribute now. I like to talk about players that flash and have upside and potential. Mm-hmm. And Ike White checks that box for me. He just needs to get stronger. Play strength, details, all those things just to get open vertically. But already he's crafty after the catch underneath. He really gets separation in those intermediate routes because he comes in and out of breaks so well. And he didn't play much high school football. So he's learning as he goes here. But to see where he's at right now, look at the natural ability. He is a player that has a lot of upside. He made a great play in the red zone yesterday where he got position and made a play on the ball. And I went, okay, like growth from the start of the camp practices that I was watching to the end and the flashes that I see, I still have question marks. Like I'm going, okay, I know you have Dalen. I know you have Chris. I know you have Brevin. But who could potentially emerge, you know, in that wide receiver four spot? I know Mike Brown-Stevens has had a good camp. I mean, is he going to be use more off the crossing routes to take advantage of his speed, getting the ball to him in space? I actually, you know, Mike Brown is actually, if I was going to go with a contributor this year, just because I think he might be used more creatively, like lining him up in the backfield, getting him mismatches, going in space, I actually would probably go with Mike Brown-Stevens if I'm going for an underrated pick to sure. flash this season.
Well, especially with Daniel Jackson being hurt right now. And that's one of the other things you and I talked about yesterday was, Minnesota is, and I'm knocking on wood right now, I don't know if you can hear it or not, but they are remarkably healthy. I mean, we're talking about they had their first scrimmage of the year on Saturday that was closed to the public and to the media, and that was the number one thing I wanted to see was that subsequent Tuesday, 48 hours later, you know, 72 hours later, what does it look like? How many injuries? Because I've seen Iowa's dealing with a lot of injuries. You've seen Wisconsin's guy already got Braylon Allen nicked up. They've got some mm-hmm. offensive linemen that are injured as well. What does Minnesota have? I mean, they have Daniel Jackson, who is going to be your slot receiver, but I'd still say arguably your wide receiver three of that group. You got Logan Richter, who's dealing with an ankle injury as well. He's missed some time, but it's not like we're talking about Tanner Morgan going down or Dalen Wright or Chris Ottman-Bell, Tyler Newbin, amongst others. I mean, they have been remarkably healthy, which considering the injury Armageddon yep. they had, especially at the running back position last year, I hope that stays that way. But I think one other thing I want to get to before we kick it back to Luke is one of the things that House and I have spent a lot of time talking about at practice together, and it's been addressed in I think both of our writings is, House, I think this is a defense that has the most amount of depth I've seen in a PJ Fleck team at Minnesota. Now, mm-hmm. before I spin a yarn, what would you say to that statement?
I would agree with that statement because when I was doing a appearance today, I was going, I'm trying to keep track of all the players I want to talk about. And before it was like, I'm like, well, you know, I got a couple of guys I want to talk about. There are so many players that have that like rotational role that could really be impactful this season. And you look at the safety spot, for example, like Darius Green, Coleman Bryson, those two already flashing behind Newbin and Howden, and you got Michael Dixon. And then we talked about all the corners, the mix of skill sets you have there. So just think about the schematic possibilities that you have to play, you know, cover one and feel good about blitzing, applying more pressure. If you can stop the run on early downs, get teams behind the sticks, you're going to be in really good shape to possibly create some more takeaways, which I think is the next step for this defense, becoming a more opportunistic group, being able to set up shorter fields. And even despite not having many takeaways last year, they were still third in field position margin, which that wins football games. So I look at the defense and go, the future of the defense is extremely bright. And the now is also bright because you have a lot of different options that you can really mix and match based upon weekly matchups. And I know Joe Rossi and the staff will certainly do that schematically.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – I mean, you said it so well. Is I'm so curious to see in those non-conference games how many defensive linemen they end up rotating through, because Joe Rossi has talked about how he wants to rotate eight. And – but he's not, I guess the way he put it was, I'm not, if we don't have eight guys that I feel comfortable with, I won't rotate eight. But, you know, he talked about yesterday is they're doing that. They have to try and get this thing down from 11 or 12 guys to eight. Again, a fantastic problem to have in theory, but to House's point, you know, they feel good about having three guys at the five technique position and Logan Redding, Lorenzo Surgers, Jod Joyner. At the rush end spot, I think Thomas Rush, again, someone everybody continues to think not incredibly highly of, not incredibly why that is, but I think he's going to, I mean, if we're going to do bold predictions later on in this, I'll tell you right now, I don't know that it's necessarily bold, but Thomas Rush is going to lead this team in sacks, pressures. I think he's been really good, but they've also got Austin Booker there who has flashed. I think Danny Strigow has looked improved. You look at the defensive tackle room. At the three technique, you'll have Trill Carter, but Devin Eastern's right there, and I think he's looked good. You've seen flashes from guys like Gage Keys there as well. At one technique, you got Logan Richter, Kyler Baugh, who is the Houston Baptist transfer, who's been starting at one technique alongside Trill. You've still got Darnell Jeffries there, the Clemson transfer. You still got Jacob Schuster there. You have a lot of bodies there. House mentioned the secondary. I mean, you mentioned Coleman Bryson and passing, but there has been no more impressive true freshman than Coleman Bryson. Would you agree or disagree with that statement?
Coleman Bryson and projecting out on Anthony Smith, just looking at sheer potential and frame and flashes, like Anthony Smith is someone when the NFL people roll through in a couple of years, that's going to be a big regret by Penn State right there, because I go and look for future blue chip players and it's like, oh yeah, you know, the Batemans of the world when I watch them. I watch Anthony Smith and I go, yeah, future blue chip player for sure.
Yeah, that's where, again, we'll revisit this down the line. But there is no true freshman in my mind that has had the proverbial training wheels taken off.
Yeah,
training
for sure.
Camp more than Coleman Bryson.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, Danny Collins loves him. Joe Rossi loves him. He is getting all of the reps behind Tyler Newbin. He's his immediate backup there. I mean, I think you're going to see him 13 games on special teams to get his feet wet. But they've got, I mean, they just have a lot of different skill sets, which is exactly, I think, what you want in this day and age of college football, because what is going to beat Wisconsin, if you're an opposing defense, is much different than what's going to beat Purdue's offense. They're two very different offenses, and I think Minnesota's got skill sets to kind of mix and match depending upon the opponent, depending upon if it's a passing down or running down. Now, again, we're not, House and I aren't here to blow smoke and tell you this is the 85 Bears out there. But I think the exciting part about it for House and I is, for as much inexperience as there is on this defense, and there is, and I think we both would acknowledge that, as good as I think this 22 defense will be, House, I'm already excited about 23, because you only lose, in theory, Thomas Rush is the only defensive lineman that exhausts his eligibility. I think Braylon Oliver still has another year if he wanted to. So you only lose Mariano. And then in the secondary, in theory, you only lose Jordan Howden. And you have a bunch of guys that are going to be getting a lot more meaningful snaps for the first time. But I'm just excited to see how Joe Rossi decides to mix and match things, because there's a lot of players that do a lot of things well. And the beautiful part about it is what Austin Booker does well, which is pass rush, may be a little bit different than what Danny Strigow does well, which is run support. And I just think, I'm hoping that we're going to see an opposing coordinator kind of fit their scheme to the players and what they do well instead of the players of the scheme, because this will be the ultimate test, because they've got a bunch of guys who would do a lot of different things well, but it's about making sure that they have their specific package, House.
Yeah, that's what football is all about, is maximizing player potential, putting them in the best position to be successful. And that's what Minnesota's defense has done really well. That's what Kirk Ciarrocca has done well as an offensive coordinator too, is just making sure that you're not just running a system and trying to jam players into the system. You're building what you do and innovating around them. And you mentioned Austin Booker. That's a player I'm intrigued by as a potential situational role player that could create some challenges based upon the opponent you're playing. And you mentioned it, you know, you might play Illinois and they're coming out and barge like they did last year. I know they don't have O-line depth, but I'm just throwing it out there. Like somebody wants to run those barge packages, you got the personnel to really adjust. And then somebody, you know, Purdue's obviously that 11 personnel, 10 personnel type of team. You have the personnel to do that. So you pretty much have an answer for any type of game plan that you got to implement, which in the past that hasn't been the case. Sometimes you're just trying to get by and come up with creative ways to attack things. But now the whole ball game changes because the defense, you can mix and match now, which is a luxury and a credit to their player development and recruiting.
All right. So very interesting conversation. I wish we had more time, but I recognize that I am the hard stop in this situation. So we have to transition into our draft. This is something that we did last year. So for those of you that didn't listen last year, House, Ryan, and I drafted who we thought was going to be a Big Ten honoree recipient. We ended up coming up with a point scheme. I'll go over the point scheme again. You get 5 points for a unanimous first team. Big Ten, 4 points for either coaches or media in the Big Ten. Again, all these awards are in the Big Ten. 3 points if you got at least a second team. 2 points if you got at least a third team. So if you're second and third team coaches and media, you'll get the points for the second team. And then 1 point for honorable mention. I just want to review last year. The number.
Why do you want to do that so badly, Luke?
I want to do that because I believe that I won. So last year, first pick went to Daniel Houseboy Mafe, home run first pick, in my opinion. Only 3 points because he was a second team All Big Ten. But Daniel, again, we're going to give you the lead off this year. But I wanted to highlight, and why this is kind of fun, is we do 3 rounds. We're going to do a snake style draft. We're going to do 5 round snake style draft. So you end up with 15 players. We only ended up getting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the, what appears to be 12 players. So we correctly got Boye Mafe, Daniel Fa'alele, Chris Ottman Bell, Blaze Andres, John Michael Schmitz, Jack Gibbons. And that was it. And the ones that we missed were Connor Olson, Sam Schluter, Kokeef, Asezi Otemiwu. Boy, I feel so good being able to say that name. Mariano Sorimarin and Tyler Newman.
I'm so proud of you.
5 years. So we missed half the players, which is kind of fun. So I'm crowning myself the 2021 champion of this draft. I would like to acknowledge first my wife and, you know, basically the fact that she gives me the opportunity to consume as much Gopher football content as I do, which is basically the game, and then talking to Ryan Burns and recording it and putting it out on the internet. And then now I want to go into 2022. Again, snake style draft. We will assess this at the end of the season. The pick is yours, Mr. House.
With 1-1, who are you going to take, Mr. House?
With the first overall pick in the Gopher Gridiron Draft, I'm selecting John Michael Schmitz.
That seems like a shoo-in. Man,
was that number one on your big board too, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to get into the nuances of it, I think that was the easiest and safest pick that you can possibly have.
I feel like Boye was pretty safe last year too. So you're really a safe drafter there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, Luke, you get number two. Who are you taking?
Okay, this is challenging for me. Because one, the very obvious one is taken off there. I'm going to go with Tyler Newbin, number two.
Oh,
I like that. Ooh. I really like that.
Thank you.
I do.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. I mean, Tyler has looked like a man possessed.
And let's be honest, guys. Like, the fact that nobody picked him last year probably wasn't a surprise, but then now based on last year's performance, it makes sense why he's getting picked, and I think deservedly a first rounder.
You know, Luke, you know who I'm going to take here, and it's going to be, you know, I'm going to almost repeat the same picks I did at this turn last year, and I'm going to get what I think is great value at 1.03 in Mohamed Ibrahim,
yep,
who has looked exactly like I remember Ibrahim looking. Now, I don't think he's going to get an egregious amount of carries, but if he still gets around 17 to 20 carries a game, he's going to smash this. And yeah, especially if Minnesota ends up potentially winning the West, you know how the media loves a darling, and that's where Mo is going to kind of put himself in there. And I'd be remiss. I want to make sure that I get my guy here, because I don't think he's going to be back when it gets back to me at 2-3. At 2-1, before we kick it back to you, Luke, I'm going to take Brevin Spanford.
You know, I took him last year, and you were very frustrated, if memory serves
you
correctly.
Yes, you took him the pick right before me, and it killed me.
Yeah, I know it killed you last year.
Sometimes you just got to go get your guy.
Sometimes
I got to go get my guy. So I'm going to get what I think is great, maybe a little bit of an early reach, and I get it if you're just tuning me out again.
But
we're taking Brevin Spanford at 2-1.
All right. I'm going to go to the offensive side of the board. I don't want to be too defensive heavy, even though I have some guys on the defensive side I want to take, but I'm going to take Daylon Wright here.
Daylon Wright goes before Chris Ottman Bell.
I know it's
Daniel,
shocking. I am buying the steam that you guys have been putting out.
Daniel, what do you think about that bold one?
That's bold, but honestly, it's not outlandish.
It's bold. You're so nice, Daniel. You're so nice.
I wish people could see House's face. Oh. That was
it,
perfect.
It honestly, though, like, we just off sheer athletic ability, I don't think it's outlandish.
I mean, without question, Daylon Wright has the most potential of anyone in that receiver room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the question that I have about that pick is Luke going to be a year too early? Because
maybe.
I think Daylon is putting it together. I just wonder if he's still a year away, but I love the boldness of that pick.
My last year was bold too. My second round pick was Niles Pinckney, and that got me nowhere. But
well, I mean, I thought he had a good year. I just
not.
Again, it is.
All
right, House, you got 2-3 and 3-1. Where are you going here on the turn?
I am going to go straight Bass homie with this. Justin Wally.
Ooh, okay. All right. Yeah, and for as much talk as we've spent on Terrell Smith, because,
yeah,
you know, it's been like people have been testing Terrell Smith. I don't know that I've seen a lot of passes thrown to Justin Wally.
That's because there's a reason for that, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel good that my big board, I haven't had to add a name that I'm totally missing right now. So I feel really good about that.
All right. So first pick of the third round, Daniel House, your selection.
I am going with Chris Ottman Bell.
That's great value right there. Honestly, that is great value.
That's a value pick. I'm swooping in.
All right. I am going to go Trill D'Angelo Carter here with this pick.
I like that.
He has been, I think, the most consistent defensive tackle in terms of pass rush, I would say. House, what do you think about that statement?
Man,
so far,
he's just so athletic. He was my guy immediately when they recruited him. I thought he is going to be a phenomenal player, and he's just met those expectation levels and just continues to get better. Very excited about him.
All right. So you've got 3-3 and 4-1, Mr. Burns.
I am going to go. Oh boy. I'm going to take an easy one for me, which is going to be Thomas Rush. Someone that had, I think, 6 sacks last year, like 8 tackles for loss, and to be able to get him at the end of the third round in this instance, I think is great value. Again, I think I already made the prediction earlier that I think Thomas Rush leads this team in sacks and pressures. And again, I think we've seen, you know, he's good against the run. I think we've seen a little bit more upside in terms of a pass rusher now that he's been able to get his feet wet. He's not thinking all the time. He can just react. I mean, from the amount of one-on-one reps I've watched, there hasn't been a defensive end that has consistently got more wins in that drill during fall camp than Thomas Rush. It's never been a question of athletic ability for him, because he is 6'3 plus, great twitch. I mean, he's got a great first step. It's just being able to kind of put it all together. So I love him there. And my first pick of the fourth round, oh boy. This makes for great radio. I'm going to go with Tanner Morgan. is
took my pick.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that at this point, I'm not one of the people who are telling you that you're going to see 30 touchdown Tanner Morgan. I don't think that that's now, is it within the realm of possibilities? No, most certainly. But I mean, what if we see Tanner Morgan with 20 touchdowns and 8 interceptions and Minnesota has a great year in the West? I mean, the barometer to be included in this, I mean, we've seen how poor of caliber the Big Ten West is in terms of quarterback play. And I think that year 5 of being a starter, back with Kirk Shiraka, and if he can find something with Dalen Wright and Brevin Spanford to go along with what he's got with Chris Ottman Bell, I'm just saying, I feel pretty good about through my first 4 rounds. Where is that going to put you, Mr. Luke Buehr, at 4-2?
You know, again, I'm probably jumping onto the hype train a little bit too much with this, but for how much Minnesota runs the ball and, you know, over the history with PJ Fleck, I'm going to take Ariante Ursery. I feel like maybe I'm a little bit early on some of these picks. But
I love your team for 2023, and I would love for you to be right in 2022. Because if you are, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of happy fans out
thank
there.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. House.
House, your last 2 picks. What do you got?
My last 2 picks. Well, I'm going with Trey Potts for one of them.
Oh. Okay, so what's the rationale there? Just that, you know, he gets a lot more carries than maybe what you and I are projecting, or what are you thinking?
Well, I'm just wondering how the carry distribution is going to look. Like with Mo coming off this injury, are they balancing these carries out a little bit more? And maybe Trey Potts is involved in the passing game a bit more. Are they – you know, put it in a very detailed screen game where they're able to maximize him, get him outside, motion him out into certain things and get him the ball. I think he could have some receiving touches possibly and some rushing yards along with it, obviously. So that's why I'm taking Trey Potts.
All right. I think you got one
more. You got
more,
one right? more now.
Yeah.
You got one more. I'm going to go with Ryan Stapp.
Ah. Ooh.
Okay. So that's a guy we haven't talked about a lot on this. Now, where are you projecting Ryan Stapp to get more snaps? In the slot or outside? Because we've seen him get both here during fall camp.
I think it's going to be a split, honestly, because each week, it's like I said, it depends on the receivers you're playing. And with his traits, though, like when you go back and look at his athletic testing, you go, okay, his shuttle times are phenomenal. Like that's his elite trait is the transition quickness ability to flip hips and open up and make plays. He will be able to like also break on the football and get into passing lanes too. So I'm banking on him coming up with the interceptions because I think that's the strength in his game is just that a reactive athleticism, if that makes sense.
Okay. Luke, I feel good. I got 2 names still on the tip of my tongue, and I'm hoping that I can get at least – I know I'm going to get one of them, but there's one that I really want to get.
So far, my big board – I did put a big board together. I put a little research into this in front of this. Ryan Stapp was the first player that wasn't on my big board, so kudos to you, Daniel. I am going to go with Mariano Seri Marin.
Damn it!
He actually returns as an honorable mention. Last year. So I feel like I have a chance of a good safe point. And honestly, I have to go with my guy, Joe Rossi, my guy that said he was going to be one of the best Big Ten linebackers going into that 2020 season. And that just wasn't the case. He changed his best in 2021 in large part, thanks to a very good defensive line. And if the hope you guys are selling again this year when he moves from the Will to the Mike, I have some hope that he can make that transition well, and this defensive line is going to keep him clean. He's going to make some plays and at least get me an honorable mention here.
I'm furious. That was going to be outstanding value. Yes. I thought about him at that 3-4 turn, and I was like, I'll just take the more – because I wanted to be team old. All my picks are just like team 5th and 6th year. And I think I'm going to stay on that same breath then, and I'm going to take Terrell Smith. Someone that last year in this draft I took at the same exact spot, which it turns out. And it's just we've spent a lot of time on it. It's not about, you know, is he physically ready? Because he is. It's just about can Terrell Smith mentally put together 13 games? And if he can, it's going to be a lot of fun this fall. If he can't, I mean, again, at this stage of the draft, I'm thinking of putting my Daniel House cap on. There is a lot of upside there. And I'm hoping that this is the year for Terrell Smith. He's been starting constantly, and he's been playing so well in fall camp. And if he can put it all together, it's going to be a fun secondary.
All right. I don't know if you guys had big boards, but I'm going to tell you who was left on my big board. I had two names left.
All right.
I did too.
Oh, did you? I had Michael Dixon and Matthew Trickett. Who'd you have?
I have no thoughts and feelings on special teams.
I know you don't.
But, Michael Dixon is interesting because he's been just straight nickel here.
I know, and that's such a huge part of the defensive scheme. I mean, people don't realize Justice Harris was a huge part of that defensive scheme. Like, it was a smart player who helped everybody get lined up actively and run fits. Like, that is a huge part of the scheme. So Michael Dixon, he could very well, like, burst onto the scene and just play unbelievably well.
Yeah, I mean, I could also see us potentially looking back and saying someone like Chuck Filiaga or Axel Rushmeyer. Things go well against sixth-year guys that are going to be starting. I think I would have been a year too early. I think this would have fit perfectly on Luke Buehr's team for Jalen Logan Redding.
That's who I had. I had flipping Jalen Logan Redding.
I just don't think Braylon Oliver or Cody Lindenberg will get enough snaps to potentially. I think they'll cannibalize each other. But I mean, you could have even picked Jordan Houghton too.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a viable selection. His fourth year is the starter at safety. And then that's where Luke, as we kind of finish up here, is one of the questions that Luke and I have talked about on this podcast is if there's going to be the season that many think, there's got to have some playmakers emerge on defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, you look at an Iowa team, 25 interceptions last year. Joe Rossi, I know, watched a lot of Iowa tape in the offseason to try and figure out how do they achieve so many turnovers. So Daniel House, we've talked about it here on this podcast, but I want to get your thoughts. Who do you think, when we look up after the Wisconsin game and see who were the playmakers on this 2022 defense? Because we've talked about so many names, but who do you think are going to be the ones that really turn the corner?
Straight bass homie, Justin Wally. I'm all in on Justin Wally. And I know everybody's talking about, you know, Beanie and Ryan Sepp, and I get that, okay? But, like, Justin Wally was, like, one of the best freshman cornerbacks in America last year. And to already see him play and adjust like he did, people that I've spoken with talk about his smarts and his work ethic and his commitment and how he's just bought into everything that they do. I'm expecting a huge jump. I saw great things in the fall practices. I'm all in on Justin Wally, and I think Rush and Newbin both as well. So if we take, you know, guys at each level of the defense, that's what I would say. Those three players are kind of my core, but there's other guys too. There's like Trill Carter. I mean, honestly, you go down the list and you go, when we did this draft, there's probably 25 players we could have easily like had a conversation about, like in that 20 to 25 range that could have been included.
All right. No, this was really fun. I hope, House, that you'll come back again. If people aren't checking out your work on gopherguru.com, they should absolutely do it. $5 a month. Make sure that you support independent journalism. Kudos for all you do, man. And we'll get you out on the golf course here real soon. Any parting words, Mr. Burns?
We'll be back, I think, next week to do our game by game predictions, which everybody holds us to. But I think the parting words would be, I feel pretty good about this team, man. Again, I've seen a lot of teams now in my 12th year doing this. And I think this team, there's no reason that this team can't be going into the Iowa game this year and either leading the West or be seriously in the West. I just don't think there's enough question marks in my mind right now. House, what are your parting thoughts?
Yeah, we didn't really get into the Big Ten West landscape and the opponents that Minnesota plays, but some of the matchups are really conducive to success too in terms of how Minnesota might approach those. I mean, I know it's early and a lot of wrinkles will be added for all these teams and we don't know what they're going to do exactly, but as I sit down and just parse through everything that teams have done, the coordinator changes across the Big Ten, I think that's a huge layer of this. There isn't much continuity coming back on these coaching staffs. That can be good, that could be bad, and that could lead to a lot of change. So there are variables at play like that, but the way things shake out, looking at the roster, I think if Minnesota that the key for me is if Minnesota's defensive tackles play well enough, that is the X factor for me. If they can get really good defensive tackle play, even, you know, rotational basis, like we talked about, but like if Kyler Baugh is really good, that would be a huge X factor for him.
Awesome. Well, appreciate your time again, Mr. House. Thank you everyone for listening. It's always fun to do this specific episode, and we'll look forward to breaking down the draft again. Keep a lookout for new episodes from Gopher Gridiron Radio. Thank you for listening, and go Gophers.